Working toward a low-carbon future is critical to achieving our sustainability goals. Don't miss the latest episode of Sustainably Speaking to hear from innovators working to make these goals a reality. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, June 11th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. We've talked a lot on the show about the intersection of healthcare and technology. Big tech companies see the health industry as a huge opportunity for even more growth. And tons of startups have been working on ways to combat illnesses and care inefficiencies with tech. So where do venture capitalists and investors fit into all this? And how are they thinking about finding the next big health tech venture? On today's episode, we'll hear from Deep Nishar, senior managing partner at SoftBank, and investor John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple. They spoke with our reporter Rolf Winkler at this week's virtual tech health event. Their conversation after these headlines. We report exclusively that a European Union privacy regulator is proposing a fine of more than $425 million against Amazon. A person familiar with the matter said the case relates to alleged violations of the EU's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR. They said it's linked to Amazon's collection and use of personal data, but declined to elaborate on specific allegations. If agreed upon by other EU privacy regulators, the fine would represent the largest penalty to date under GDPR. A spokesman for Amazon declined to comment. The company has previously said that it complies with the law in all countries where it operates and that the privacy of its customers is a priority. The Biden administration launched a task force aimed at giving artificial intelligence researchers more access to government data about Americans, like demographics, health, and driving habits. They'd also look to free up more computing power to analyze that data. It's part of an effort across the government to ensure that the U.S. is on the cutting edge of advancements in AI, as China, Russia, and other countries threaten to overtake the U.S. in their development of the crucial new tech. And Tesla unveiled a new version of its luxury Model S sedan last night. The company hopes to reinvigorate demand for the car that helped establish it as the world's leading electric vehicle maker a decade ago. Tesla says the Model S Plaid will be priced at around $130,000 and up. And yes, its name is a reference to the Mel Brooks movie Spaceballs. Sales of the Model S have slumped in recent years, and its redesign is the latest sign that Tesla has evolved from a sprightly startup to an established player that needs to upgrade legacy models to keep buyers interested. All right, coming up after the break, where top investors and venture capitalists are placing their bets when it comes to health tech. A conversation between our reporter Rolf Winkler, SoftBank's Deep Nishar, and former Apple CEO John Sculley, next.
This episode is brought to you by Athena Health, creator of innovative electronic medical record, revenue cycle, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services for medical practices and health systems. Some healthcare IT companies have just begun to move toward connected systems. Athena Health started there. See how their unparalleled nationwide network of providers enables the insights that drive better clinical and financial outcomes. Learn more at athenahealth.com.
Hi, Deep. Hi, John. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. So we're here to talk about the next unicorn in health tech. Here's my question. How are you identifying them? What's exciting? John, feel free to jump in.
Well, remember, I'm not a venture capitalist, so I don't see as many different companies as Deep does, but I focus on companies that I find or they find me, which are doing truly transformational things where they're saying, we are going to do something that has never been done before. And that's the type of business that attracts me. I only do founder businesses.
Call one out then. What's one in particular, John, that you think is going to be the next, you know, let's call it a decacorn, since the unicorns aren't really all that rare anymore.
Okay. So let me give you one of my favorite examples. I have a company that I work with over in London. They have developed a really terrific technology. It's really a foundational invention. Much like MRI or ultrasound were in their day, you know, 50, 40 years ago. And what they do is they use a harmless electrical field. They can look through the epidermis They can not only accurately measure non-invasively the blood glucose, we focus on the 90% of the
people. Is that using an optical sensor, or are we talking about something for like this or for what?
You know, most people have tried it with optical sensors. They've tried looking at interstitial fluids. It really doesn't work accurately. So the devices that are insulin-based always have to be calibrated with blood every 2 weeks when the patch is changed. But what this company does, it is able to use this harmless electrical field. It finds the digital signature for not just blood, but they can look at electrolytes like potassium and sodium. They can look at other blood constituents, hemoglobin. They can look at lipid, so forth.
Before we go too far down that path, I want to let Deep jump in here. Deep, what sure. for you, if I can, I'm just curious, you know, how do you look for, you do see a lot of companies at SoftBank, and you've had a lot of successes. Tell me, what are the ways you identify the next big health tech unicorns?
So I have a very fundamental thesis, and you know, like John, I didn't grow up in the life sciences field. I'm a technologist. I'm an electrical engineer by background. And I have a big belief that the life sciences company of tomorrow is really going to be a technology company that happens to work on biology. And what I look for is this confluence of computation and biology coming together. And I think that's really going to change the way we think about disease management, and therapies for those diseases. So a couple of names that come to mind, in situ, Deep Genomics, both of them, you know, started by AI engineers, machine learning engineers, who are also very deep in bioengineering and biological sciences, and they're doing some amazing work in this space.
Deep, I want to ask you about this intersection, this collision of tech and healthcare. Healthcare is something that the tech folks have been trying to break into for years. It's this gigantic, gigantic piece of the economy that a lot of folks struggle to disrupt. I guess specifically, what have been the challenges for tech companies trying to disrupt the healthcare industry? Why have they struggled to, why is it harder for software to eat that world?
Where can we start? And definitely 10 or 15 minutes are not going to be sufficient, but there are probably three areas. The first one is regulation. The way drugs and therapies and even disease management systems get approved, it's on the principle, which is the correct principle of first do no harm.
You can't move fast and break things in health the way you can in tech.
You cannot, because you know it's people's lives at matter. Now, if we do it appropriately and we do it mindfully, I think we get like what we did last year with the COVID-19 vaccine, right? We went from the genomic sequence of the virus being put up there over a weekend on like January 11th. By January 13th, Moderna had designed a candidate vaccine, shipped it to the NIH, and within a week, the first trial was out, and December 18th, they got an emergency use authorization, phase 3, the fastest it's ever happened. Would have taken 5, 6, 7 years prior. Second is mindset. So what I find is life sciences folks are scientists, they're not technologists. As technologists, we are used to tinkering, making forward progress, but also okay with moving back. Scientists, it's a lot harder. The bar is super high. So even after a drug gets approved, it takes on an average 7 years before an average doctor starts prescribing it for the condition for which it was approved. It takes that long to percolate through the system.
So how do your companies overcome these obstacles in order to have that impact?
The mindset, I think, is changing very fast, because as more technologists are getting into this business, you know, the science and technologists, they are working closely together. If you look at Moderna's story, like the reason they were able to put out this candidate vaccine out so quickly, it's not because like overnight, you know, someone's light bulb came out. The way they built that company in the previous 9 years was to bring the scientists, the manufacturing people, and the technologists all together. They built bespoke systems. Their manufacturing folks were well aligned with their scientists. And the technologists who were, you know, doing all the sequencing, putting the systems together, and that's how you come together. And I'm seeing more and more of that.
Okay, artificial intelligence, machine learning, these are sexy topics in the tech space. How are those being used to disrupt health tech?
I'll give you a very simple example. Again, COVID-19, I think, has been rich and fertile, and it's really accelerated our adoption of technology in life sciences. So Vir Biosciences started by virologists, scientists who've been in the pharma world for decades. Their antibody for COVID-19 was just approved for emergency use about 3 weeks ago by both Europe and the US.
Okay, that's a year later, so that's pretty fast by historical standards.
Exactly. And the way they found this antibody is they had blood samples and antibodies from SARS patients. Remember SARS that happened about 10 plus years ago in Asia, and they had blood samples from those patients, and they had multiple antibodies for this patient who had beaten back SARS. And they had to use machine learning as a pure science company. And they were like, okay, of all these hundreds of antibodies, which one should we put to trial? You know, in the olden days, again, you'd take like multiple candidates, you'd go through years and years of testing. Here, we had a very short time frame. And so they used machine learning to pick the right one. And it worked amazingly, 85% efficacy.
John, where are you seeing AI disrupt healthcare?
Well, first, let me point out what's going on in the high-tech world, because high-tech tends to be maybe a decade ahead of the healthcare industry in terms of using high technology for really successful purposes. If you take Snowflake or UiPath, which are two very successful, recently public companies that are using something called robotic process automation, which is soft robots, which are able to go in and take simple tasks and be able to use automation. Well,
sure, like reading an invoice.
Exactly.
Instead of using a person to read an invoice and enter that into the accounting system, I can just have a bot do it. How do we get that? There's something similar in healthcare?
Well, there is, but there's a difference too. And the difference is that the rules and regulations, as Deep was pointing out, are incredibly complex in the healthcare world. And so if you want to go to the place where the money is, it's in the payer side of the healthcare industry, and particularly with the transaction processing that goes on in the payer industry, that's where the money is. But if you look at the arcane rules, often created by the influence of lobbyists, plus the regulations, state and federal, it's really complex. And so a company I'm involved with, which is called Nirvana Health, we have built platforms using robotic process automation, but we have deep domain expertise in being able to use AI and machine learning to go in and dramatically lower the costs of these types of processes and be able to go across the entire continuum of care. We do it both on the payer side and the PBM side.
Okay, great. Are there ways to play this trend for retail investors?
It's hard. Obviously, there are secondary markets, but again, buyer beware. You have to be accredited, and you should do your homework. You know, when things are going well, everyone starts getting very interested in these things. And the one thing, if anything, long-term life sciences investors have learned is that you have feast and famine over time, and you really need to know why you're getting into a name and why you're investing in a company, because sometimes things go up for no reason, and they also come down for no reason.
So I found to focus on the things I understand. You know, if I can't understand it, then I don't think I have any reason to want to invest in it. And so I went into health tech and into biotech starting 15 years ago. I come out of high tech, and it took me a lot of years till I felt I was comfortable enough that I could trust my own judgments and built up a network of people I could get advice from and so forth. So you just can't jump into a new field without some connectivity and ability to know who else you can look to for advice.
One thing we're seeing in health tech is an explosion of investment into metabolic disease point solutions. Livongo bought for billions by Teladoc. Noom is a weight management app that just raised over $500 million. I don't think many people had heard about him. I mentioned these. John, while you were at Pepsi, you invented the 2-liter bottle. Should soda companies be doing more to solve these metabolic problems?
Probably not, but they should try to clean up some of the problems that they have created.
How? What should they be doing? I mean, was the 2-liter bottle even a good idea now that with all these years of hindsight?
Well, here's how I think about it. I'm very interested in lifestyle solutions for digital health. 90% of the diabetics are type 2 diabetics. And diabetics, if you're type 2 or if you're a pre-diabetic, that is either preventable or reversible. Mm-hmm. And so we're using our electrical sensors with machine learning and AI to both get accuracy and then to do interpretation of a lot of different biomarkers. And we're going into exactly the spaces where you mentioned Noom, who is a very successful company that is around lifestyle behavioral changes, or Livongo would be a good example. Livongo, $19 billion market cap when it went public, sold to Teladoc. But its great success as a company didn't have a lot to do with digital technologies that we have available to us today. And now we have biomarkers that we can track with sensors and machine learning and AI. So we can go in and instead of using paper strips and finger prick, instead of using hypertension and using cuffs, instead of using scales and things like that, we can use the next generation of digital technology and measure biomarkers.
How are you investing in that? Yeah, how are we investing in, where do people put their money to take advantage of the idea of continuous health monitoring, keeping people healthy, not just treating them when they're sick?
Well, first of all, there's a major trend that's going on for remote patient monitoring. It's only going to get better and better. And then when you add to that 3D medical grade sensors and the ability to not only get more accuracy with machine learning AI, but also be able to take that across the entire continuum of care and start to use connectivity, because the point of care is shifting dramatically, as we've seen with telehealth, thanks to the pandemic last year. The point of care is moving into the home, it's moving into the retail, it's moving into wherever you happen to be. So that opens up really new ways to think about what's the next Livongo going to look like.
Yeah, I think it all comes from the fact that once we can measure something, we can do something about it.
Yes.
And the one name I leave you with is Whoop. It's a healthcare monitoring system that you wear, just like an Apple Watch, measures your sleep, which, by the way, we talk about all these biomarkers, but sleep is the most important indicator of our health and well-being. And no one really does it very well.
All right. John, Deep, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate
it. Thank you for having us.
That's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.